Welcome, everyone, to this latest episode of the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am Brian, joined by my awesome co-host, Jim.
Hi-de-ho!
Oh, no. Let's not bring him into this. And and we have a guest this week, so it's not going to be all over the place like last week. We have a guest this week. Oh, my God. Paul, I'm not even going to try to say your last name.
That's cool.
Because you pretty much told me not to. And I tried it, and it was terrible. But Paul is the lead developer on a game that's currently in Kickstarter called Void Destroyer. And I got to say, first off, Paul, the Kickstarter seems to be going pretty well. So congratulations on that. Looks like you're going to make your goal. I'm guessing. I haven't looked at ClickTrack in a little bit, but I'm guessing, knock on wood, that you're going to make your goal with a few days left.
That would be nice.
Yeah,
I could relax a little bit then.
It's been a steady climb. Like, it's been going up and up. It's been like very steady. Like that little yodeler guy on that Price is Right game. You know, that little thing that goes up the. Anyway, so it's been going up pretty well. So it looks like
to me, every second is a new adventure in the climb of my Kickstarter. Every second is like, okay, what's going on now?
Yeah. Well, it's a full-time thing. That's what I've had other people tell me. Like, running a Kickstarter is a full-time thing. You don't just, you know, put it out there and you're done.
And yeah, if you do that, unless you're really famous, you're not gonna get anywhere.
Even then, like the Elite Dangerous Kickstarter, I was a little at that at first because there was like nothing there.
Yeah, they were kind of weird. They were weird.
I mean, they eventually pulled it out of their hat, but for a while I was like, really, you're just going to have us run on nostalgia? No, thank you. But you are like the complete opposite, because this thing has been going for what?
It's almost
12 days, roughly.
There we go.
12 days, I think. And you have over two dozen updates, which is, damn, man, that's wow. So before we get into that, tell the folks out there what Void Destroyer is, if they haven't seen the Kickstarter, if they haven't seen the website. Give folks the rundown of what the game is.
So Void Destroyer is my attempt to ruin everybody for every other space game or RTS game out there.
I like that. That's awesome. I like that a lot.
Once you play this game, my goal is that next time you play some other game, you're going to start puking. You're not going to know why. You're not going to know why, but at some point you'll go to a forum and somebody will explain it to you. Well, you played this game and now every other game is terrible to you. That's my goal. That's my goal anyway. Whether I get there or not, I'm going to really try very hard. So essentially, it lets you do probably too many things at once. Let's face it. It's probably too many things at once for any normal human being with any sort of normal gaming experience, because you can fly ships. And you can give them commands, so you're basically tacking on two games at once.
Right.
And the way you can manage this, there's a pause key, basically, the magical pause key, where you can issue orders while you switch back and forth. So
let me just tell you, for that, thank God you added that. Because I've been playing the latest iteration of this thing, and yeah, you need that pause key. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
You know, and the sad trend in gaming lately has been the removal of the pause key. You know, because it's like, oh, no, you open your inventory, like The Last of Us, which is getting stellar reviews everywhere, by the way. But that's one of the features of that thing is like, well, it's a survival horror kind of game. If you open your backpack and you're like rummaging around, things continue to beat your ass.
That's right? Probably when they start spawning the zombies.
I kind of think that's okay in that sense, because that kind of adds to the tension, that adds to the atmosphere and the flavor of the thing. Mm-hmm. But in a game like this, Jim, did you play it? Did you try it at all?
I got it installed, but I didn't get it fired up
yet. Okay, well, I have fired up all the tutorials, and I started the first game. And yeah, you need the pause key for this.
So
I say that in a good way. I say that in a very positive way.
So what I try to do, I try not to impose too much of myself. You know, there is a lot of that, but there's also this, okay, but if you don't want it, then you can pause it. You know, so my goal is to do a lot of different options so a lot of different game styles can play it. Hopefully that works out. There's always going to be some a lot of heavy-handed stuff when one person works on a game for, you know, the amount of time, and then lets people have it at a larger scale, you know, kind of far into the
So this being an RTS hybrided with, you can take direct control of any of your ships, right?
Right.
So whenever you take control of the ships, do your orders continue to stand, or do you delegate AI to control things while you're busy?
Imagine you're a crazy general that's on the front lines. Or actually, I've been corrected because in the Navy it's actual admiral. So imagine you're a crazy admiral in a carrier, right? And all of a sudden you remotely pilot one of the F-15s, you know, and your guys are still going to do what you told them to do. If you don't tell them anything, they're going to do their own thing like a regular soldier would. But you can jump into tactical mode and you can tell them directly, hey, you know, you guys attack that guy. You guys move to this position. You guys hold this position. You guys hold here. You know, so essentially it gives you this sort of control. You don't have to rely on the AI as much. You know, if you ask anybody, they're probably going to say the AI is probably one of the most worst aspects of games in general, because they either do something too well or not well enough. Either way, they annoy you. But in RTS games, you know, you're the AI, right? So this is the kind of marriage that I kind of give to the space sim, where you can control your guys in a more direct way. You know, you don't have to be really frustrated by what they do. Hopefully, you know, once all the good tools are in to achieve this, you should only have to blame yourself and not me if you lose. Although I will throw a lot of ships at you and try to kill you as much as I can.
Mm. But if I jump into a ship, will AI kind of assist where I'm not looking? Or is it just that my guys will be dumb because I'm not there?
Imagine you're in a war, you know, and your other ships are going to be piloted by the crew. If you're in a ship, you have a choice either having that ship be piloted by the crew or by you. So you don't really necessarily have to fly anything. It's really – a lot of the game is optional in that sense, where you can be an autopilot or can take direct control. Hopefully people will switch between the different modes depending on the situation. You know, when you're in a larger ship, you might not want to directly fly it because maybe it's a little sluggish. But if you're in a little small fighter, then chances are you do want to fly it. But your other ships will do their own thing, just like in Warcraft, right? Warcraft 2, Warcraft 3. Your units will respond to attacks. And if you tell them, hey, go here and attack everything on the way, they'll do that for you. So,
okay. Jim, I have seen this, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have seen this in the game I was playing, because at one point you do command like a larger ship. So what you tell, you give it a move order, and then you can move to turret control. It'll still keep moving in that direction. It'll still keep doing what you tell it.
So does your being in direct control of a ship, rather than just grabbing it and saying, go over there and kill that guy, but actually taking direct control, does that confer a bonus into the ship?
It doesn't change any sort of, it doesn't give you more firepower. It just gives you the control of it. So again, imagine having soldiers. You know, you can either tell your soldier, hey, fire that gun, or you can do it yourself. So it's really optional in that sense. Some real-time strategy players might say, hey, I don't really want to fly. And they don't really have to, you know. Now, because you're a human being, because you have intelligence and intuition, and because you can practice and get better at games, that's your bonus. That's where your bonus comes in.
Okay.
Over the AI, because you're just, you know, you're smarter than what I'm able to code.
I got my butt reamed last night in like the first mission, where I was supposed to fly a ship through a gate, and you're supposed to activate the gate, and I didn't do it in time.
But essentially the game is, it's kind of forgiving, well, maybe not forgiving, but I hope it's fair. You know, where that ship has a lot of health points.
Yeah, it did. And I just didn't really know what I was doing.
So if I could steal Dark Souls, you know, and like steal that sort of thing, and like brand myself as the Dark Souls of space sims, you know, I would love that. Ooh. You know, because Dark Souls is, it'll kill you, but it'll give you a chance first.
That's,
you know,
the title of the podcast right there, the Dark Souls of space game.
And that'd be very cool, you know, because Dark Souls is a great game.
It's kicking my ass, man. I just started playing it. It's kicking my butt, but
it's fair, you know. It's
satisfying when you finally get that hit, and you're like, oh, you got to time that. Oh,
you kind of, every death teaches you something, you know, like that, where you're headed towards the gate.
Yeah.
Well, you're supposed to head towards it. You're not really supposed to stop. You're actually supposed to switch to your other ships, the little guys around you, and then you're supposed to kill the fighters, you know, because your cruiser doesn't have that good a capability to fight them off because the turrets are mounted on top.
And it's so easy to do that with the B or the V key.
Right. You switch to a fighter and you take on the other fighters. That's really what you're supposed to do, or you just head for the gate.
Dang it.
Now, there's this other thing, okay, it's pretty hilarious, okay, because I didn't realize, I sort of intended this, sort of not, right? But I was watching this Let's Play, and the player said, hey, last time I did this, I got killed, so this time I'm just going to activate the gate right away, right? And when you do that, when the gate is activated for outgoing travel, well, you can't come in via it, you know, it's kind of like a one-way door.
Right.
So he effectively didn't get those enemies coming in at all, you know? Which is, I'm like, oh, that's pretty smart. I kind of intended it because it's only one way at a time. And it's cool that the player first died, right? Because you want him to learn the lesson first. And then he learned it and he's like, okay, well, this time I'm going to activate ahead of time, you know, and avoid combat at all, you know?
How are you going to combat that? Are you going to make it like if you turn it on, it only stays on for like a minute? And
No, I'm not going to touch that at all. That's brilliant.
Oh, I kind of love that.
That's really smart, I think. I'm not going to touch that at all. So obviously whole game, you're not going to be able to activate gates so that nobody comes in to smack you around, right? You'll just be sitting in a sector in a very, very peaceful state, right? But in this particular case, I think it's a really smart idea.
That's kind of awesome. But yeah, I mean, I really like the fact that you do have options because you have not only you can directly control a fighter. When you get to a big ship, you can either directly control it or give it orders like a tactical game. Or you can go to the big old wide out tactical view and control it like an RTS, which is fantastic.
Yeah. So essentially, that was my goal. My goal was like, hey, you know, I want to do it all. You know, when I was a kid, I remember when I was a kid, I was playing like Double Dragon in some convenience store or something, you know, for quarters, right? And I'm like, hey, I want to go down that alleyway. Of course, it was like a 2D game. And you can't. It's just a thing. But I'm like, oh, I wonder what's over there. You can't do it, right? And ever since that moment, as I'm playing games, I'm always like, oh, what if you could do this, right? I'm sure a lot of us gamers are like this.
Oh, yeah. That's like one reason I love Skyrim so much.
Right.
Now
games let you do that. Before, they really didn't let you do that, right? So when you make your own game, you're like, okay, well, you think back like, hey, as a kid, you want to do it all, right? So
exactly.
That's what I tried to put in there.
So how did this come about? Where did the idea for this game come from? How did you get inspired? And like, how long have you been working on it? Give me the history.
I've been working on it for 4 years. So basically, a lot of us probably always wanted to create a game. And probably some of us tried and failed at certain points, and so did I. I tried and failed a few times. My programming wasn't good enough. I've always been around programming, but not good enough to that level to get something really accomplished. You know, I did the classes, I went through some college courses, but they never really teach you to make big pieces of software, which is what games are. So what happens is you never learn these particular lessons. You kind of have to sit there. But anyway, I was looking at Mount and Blade, great game, right? And it was like a one man team and his wife for the art, you know, one man coder and his wife for the art.
Right.
And I'm like, holy crap, this is a great game, and they did it, and people are enjoying this. I'm enjoying this. This is like a really cool, great idea. This was 4 years ago,
right?
And that was one of my inspirations. Actually, that game.
That's good inspiration because I can actually kind of see it because in that game, there's a lot you can do on the small and large levels, you know, which
actually, yeah, when you think about it, it's kind of similar. There's actually some real-time strategy elements to it too.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've always wanted to create a game, and I started, and I didn't really think I would get this far, to tell you the truth. I thought I would just become a better programmer, essentially. But what happens is, you know, you get into this addicting cycle, right? If you play the MMO, right, you level up, right?
Right.
And then you want, okay, now I want to level up some more, right? And you get into this cycle, and then you're pretty much addicted to it. And that's really intentional in their way. Well, it's kind of the same thing with this game where I would add a feature, I would struggle, I would get it in, and I would feel great. And that feeling of, oh, this is awesome, kept me going, right? Even though the graphics were absolutely terrible and the controls were terrible, the ships were terrible, everything was really, really bad. But, you know, when you sit in front of a keyboard and you code, you create this world, you get this chance to essentially, you know, make a universe. And that is a really cool feeling. And it just kind of keeps you going. And if you kind of realize to yourself enough times that it's not going to be easy, that you're going to struggle, but eventually you'll get someplace good, you can continue on. So at a certain point, it was too much work to stop. You know, and then that's another thing, right? So now you're at this point where you're like looking back and saying, okay, well, I can't stop now, you know, and you still get this motivational cycle. And then you want it to look good. So then you try to hire artists, you know, and that's another challenge. And then you have to manage a team of sorts, you know, and then people leave and they come and go, or it's hard to find them. And then you try to get sound, and then you start putting out releases. And then you have to market the game. You know, so first you're the idea guy, then you're the coder, you're the developer, then you're the team leader, then you're the owner, then you're the marketer, then you're the publisher, you know. So you kind of run the whole gambit of game design, which is something that most gamers are really interested in. So am I. So it's pretty much self-fueling. And the features really came one after the other. There's like no shortage of features. I'm sure in 10 years I probably wouldn't run out. So it was really easy in terms of, okay, what do I do next? It was really easy in those terms. It's harder to actually put it into place, but in terms of what do I do next, that wasn't so bad. So it just kept on going.
Well, there are quite a lot of features. I mean, it looks like you have a story-based campaign. You have an instant action mode. You have what looked to be some editors. It looked like you have at least a battle editor, so you can make a battle.
Right. So, you know, when you're a one-man team, you try to make things for multiple reasons. So the battle editor lets me test gameplay, lets me test different ships and different objects, and at the same time it gives the player a cool little thing to create maps, you know, and stage battles. So certain things like that you have to really watch out for and try to really exploit. You know, if there's a good reason for something, maybe look for another good reason and try to aim towards both those reasons.
Will the user be able to create just like one map and one mission, or will they be able to string together a series of missions for like a campaign?
So the user can do, as far as map goes, maps, and as far as missions and stories, the user will be able to do everything I can do.
Nice.
So the way I do things is I open up the game, and I create a map in the battle editor, and then I take that map out of the game and I edit it in Notepad. And I tweak the amount of, I add in dialogue, I add in missions, you know, things like that, tweak the different triggers, the cutscenes. That's all in Notepad. That's not in code. And that's specifically made this way for modding. So when I come across something that I need, then I add that to the code, but I also make that available in the XML files.
Okay.
So essentially, you can pretty much do everything story-wise. You can do everything that I'm doing. And not only that, but you're going to have an example of how it's done, because you can just open up the text files. You can see, okay, this is how a cutscene gets triggered. Okay, this is how the dialogue starts. So, okay, this is, you know, when this object gets close to this position, then some ships spawn, you know, things like that. So it's really intended to be very modding friendly, just like Mount and Blade. You know, I saw these incredible mods that improved the game, made the game better.
Right.
And you're thinking to yourself, holy crap, you know, you work on a game for X number of years and these people come in, they make it better. But it's actually awesome. It's not something to be feared. So you should try to encourage that as much as you can, because then your game lives on. You know, we're still talking about Mountain Blade now.
Exactly. Know? Yeah. Just like Free Space 2, we're still talking about that.
Right. Yeah. So really, I'm trying to, you know, get all those guys over to my side. have them playing with a new engine, you know, better graphics, although they did do some cool stuff with it. So, certainly I shouldn't really knock Free Space 2. It's a great project there. But yeah, I'm trying to, the other thing about modding is I'll actually listen to modders. And if they say, hey, what about this? I'll add that in. For example, Backer wanted self-replicating missiles. Which is kind of ridiculous. They look ridiculous in game. I have to create a video of them because there's a missile, it flies, it explodes into other missiles, and then the missiles itself explode, and then those explode for infinity, right? It's ridiculous. It's like the most of warfare, because it takes like, I don't know, a minute for one of them to hit its target finally, because they keep like exploding.
I could actually see a gameplay case for having like a MIRV, right, where it's like, let's say for each missile that you fire, before it gets to the target, like not like very distant from, but whenever it gets reasonably close, it splits into multiple warheads, because if the enemy ship has a point defense cannon and it's shooting down warheads, that gives it maybe six chances to hit instead, so it would overwhelm the point defenses.
But more importantly, it's freaking awesome, you know? You know, people ask me, hey, how come there's Newtonian physics? Is it realistic? I'm like, well, it's there because it's awesome. You know? It's not because I really want physics. I really want awesome, you know, and physics tend to be awesome.
You know what would be awesome is if you had a Newtonian drive that actually fired apples out the back of the ship.
As a propulsion?
Yeah,
it sounds like you can do that in this game. It sounds like you could. That would be.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. Well, you know, you could.
Yeah, please don't put that in.
You could definitely tweak the particle system to emit sprites that look like apples.
So, did you make this engine? The engine that the game runs on? Did you?
So, a lot of times people say like, "Oh, this guy did it all by himself," you know, and they don't say that just about me, but they say about other projects. The reality is, almost nobody ever does anything on their own. Unless they're not connected to the internet, unless they're in somewhere in a basement. Even then, they're using a computer that somebody else created and a language that somebody else created and rendering engines and different technology, right? So the engine is a combination of parts. So I took Ogre 3D, which is a rendering engine. I started with that, so I didn't have to learn how to display things on the screen. I'm still fuzzy about some of those things. Let me put it this way. There's a lot of math involved and things like that. And I took a engine for physics, bullet physics, and I took an engine for GUI and an engine for sound, right? So you combine these.
Oh, wow.
And then you can play sound, you can display things on the screen, and you can have physics. But everything else is gameplay, right? A ship is not a 3D model just by itself. It has parameters. It's how it flies. Same thing with guns. You know, projectiles flying somewhere, hitting something. Physics helps you with that, but it doesn't define it. So everything else in there is what I did, you know. But certainly without a lot of these tools, it would be very hard. Maybe it might have even been too hard for me to start, you know, because when you're starting out, you are a beginner, you know. And if there's this hurdle of displaying things on the screen, you might not get past it. So there's definitely a lot of help. So if somebody says, hey, I did it all by myself, you know, I'll be kind of skeptical. If somebody says that about me, I'll be like, well, you know, I had a lot of help. There's hundreds of people involved in this that I've never met.
So did you have to learn how to render things in 3D and texture it and that, or did you have some help with the graphics or what? Because it's a really good looking game. Yeah.
So, I was obsessed with the graphics, and I'm still obsessed with the graphics. So, I tried to create my own models. It didn't really work out too well. All my models looked like they're carved from a block of wood. They all look like one piece. So an artist came on board that essentially defined the look of the space. And, you know, he was an artist that I didn't have to tell what to do. You know, everything he did was better than I could tell him, which is what you want out of an artist. If you're looking for an artist, find one that will do things better than you can tell him. Whatever you can tell them is not going to be good enough for a game in general. Because just because of the language barrier, you know, between two human beings. So I found an artist and he created all these incredible models. And then unfortunately, about 8 months later, he had a heart attack and he died.
Oh, no.
So the game had about, you know, incredible tragedy. And he wasn't just an artist. Let me put it this way. He was almost as obsessed about the game as I was. You know, sometimes I wondered, maybe he was more obsessed. You know, we would trade all these emails back and forth. They were just long, giant emails. Mm. And we would talk nonstop. And then he dies. And it's incredibly, terribly bad. Not only for the project, of course, but also losing a friend and other people losing a brother and son and all those issues, right? So somehow the project continued. And a friend of his actually picked up the pieces. You know, he picked up the torch. And we were able to finish a lot of the models, or actually even recreate some of them, to be at this stage we are now.
Right.
So I had to learn to texture a lot more. I had to learn to tweak the models a lot more. I can do some of this now. It takes an incredibly long amount of time, but it's certainly possible. So the art style is kind of that, you know, where one person really defined it to the point where other people could continue on. Because it's really hard to, I think, for an indie project, it's hard to have multiple people doing art unless the art is generic or unless they're really awesome or something. But it's kind of rare, you know. But we were lucky where we had enough material to work off of. And the friend that picked up the pieces, you know, he was pretty much of the same mind as I was of, hey, let's try to preserve Drew's legacy. Drew was the artist that died. Let's try to preserve his legacy. You know, he did all this work. Let's try to, you know, let's not start from scratch with some other art style or some other artist. You know, there weren't enough ships to do a game yet. So that was a real possibility. You know, when you look at indie games, sometimes you don't see behind the scenes what actually happens. Some incredibly challenging things, not only in terms of programming, but literally half your team can die, you know? And he was a young guy. He was in his 40s and he was in good shape that I saw. So it's just one of those terrible things happening. So, you know, we continued on. There was really no stopping it. It was at this point, it was pretty much in my blood. You know, and to stop it would be like to stop breathing, essentially. You know, when I get home, that's what I do. It's kind of hard to describe, I guess. You know, when you essentially have your kind of your whole inner world revolve around one thing, you know. So that is the situation behind the art style.
Well, I gotta say, I like the art style a lot. It's very industrial. Like, it's not sleek. You know, like a lot of space games try and be sleek. This is not sleek. And I actually like that. I like that
a lot. Definitely, you know, having ships that are made out of rocks is definitely kind of weird, you know. But if anybody sees a ship with a rock that's made out of a rock, then hopefully they're going to think of Void Destroyer. They're not going to think of Star Citizen or Elite, right? They're not going to think of that. So... you know, as an indie team, as a person like me, you try to differentiate yourself, you know,
because
you have nothing to lose. You have absolutely nothing to lose. You might as well risk it all, you know, so you can make ships that are made out of rocks. You know, it's perfectly fine. You can do crazy things. You can combine strategy games with space sims, you know, in fact, hey, combine something else to it, you know, just go wild. You know, that's what you have to do. Because you're fighting for attention. You're not fighting for money. And it's an uphill climb, let me put it this way. So the art style has to be unique. If I tried to replicate the X Games art style, I would fail, first of all, because they have, you know, 10 artists with doing it full time. Not only would I fail, I would fail and be generic. So it's something that definitely has to be, as an indie, you definitely have to watch out for that. You know, AAA studios should watch out for that too, but they have a lot more risks. You know, they have payrolls and people depending on this thing to make a living. But maybe they don't take enough risks. I don't know. I'm not going to judge them too much, you know, not knowing that world, but definitely as an indie, you have to take risks. So you have to be unique. So the game is not photorealistic. The art style is not photorealistic, but that lets you have more ships on the screen. That lets you have bigger battles.
Right.
So that's a win. You know, not only are you more unique visually, now you're more unique gameplay-wise because now you have war, right? You don't have just four ships against four ships. You don't have this constant, okay, let me launch some more fighters at you because you just killed four of my guys. Let me just space this out for you because either you're going to die too quick or the game engine can't handle it. Void Destroyer, because you just switched to another ship, you know, you can do that. You can have big battles. So really everything kind of melded together, you know, the real-time strategy elements, the art style, it all kind of like really fit together at the end. And hopefully players will forgive every negative aspect of a one-man team or indie development and try to look at the positives.
Well, I think indies have become so awesomely prolific that people will forgive a lot, I think. I don't think people unless you're looking at AAA titles, I don't think people – I'd like to think people aren't as big of graphics whores they might have been at one time.
Right,
Because, you know, if you limit yourself to games that have the best graphics, you're going to miss out on a lot of stuff, you know?
You're going to miss out on all the risk-taking, you know? People that don't have to make money can take risks, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like I was playing, Mark of the Ninja a little while back, and, you know, those aren't like super slick AAA graphics. They're, you know, they're good graphics. They're not the best, but it's not about the graphics. It's about the gameplay. And I think the gameplay is, people are starting to more and more realize that the gameplay is where it's at. It's less about the graphics. Even though graphics are important, it's not, you know, we've come to a point of processing power that, oh, it's not that big a deal anymore.
Right. So what happens is, you know, constraints, having limits makes you try to innovate, you know, because, hey, I can't knock down this wall. Well, maybe I can go around it. And maybe going around it is actually more interesting because everybody else knocks down the wall. So having constraints is definitely a strength that indies have, you know, not being able to take risks and having constraints are our two main tools that we should try to exploit as much as we can.
I like how all that sounds. So tell me about the story in the game. You're apparently a retired general that apparently looks like he comes out of retirement. I didn't get that far because I died. And then I forgive you for this. Your game is an alpha. It crashed a lot for me. And when I died, the autosave crashes. So I can't even get back to where I was.
Yeah, so the thing about the crashes is that, you know, I play tested the game constantly.
Right.
You know? And then all of a sudden with Kickstarter, I have this bigger, much bigger audience.
Sure.
Pretty much out of nowhere. And now somebody clicked on a button too quickly. You know, and I shouldn't say too quickly because players can click it as quickly as they want. You know, they should be able to. But that was a funny bug where somebody clicked it too quickly.
Really?
And it caused the crash.
Wait, you're not making that up. Someone actually did that.
Yeah, somebody did that. So they clicked it within 0.1 seconds.
Oh, my God.
I had a timer going that waited till a sound stopped playing for 0.1 seconds.
Right.
And a player clicked that within that time period and the game crashed. It was my fault. It was a bug. But I would never encounter it without that player. Never, okay? So I went in, I fixed it, right? And there was another bug. What was this other bug? Oh, man, I can't remember at this point. But they were just, like, incredibly, incredibly just weird things that that people tried. You know, somebody shot up an asteroid and shot a missile at it as it was blowing up and it crashed the game, you know? So some players shot up an asteroid for like a minute or something and then shot a missile at it right as it was dying. that's something I would not try, you know.
Right.
Another player, as they're exiting the gate, when you exit a gate, you get a boost in velocity. And usually I don't touch the keyboard and mouse at all at that point when I do this because there's no reason because the gate just kind of carries you off. But a player doesn't know this, right? So the player keeps pressing the forward key, the thruster, right?
Right.
So now they're like hurling towards the sun, you know? And that's something I would never think of. So I fixed, I believe, 3 or 4 crash bugs. It looks like it's pretty stable now. I haven't gotten too many complaints lately. So definitely if you crash, then, you know, reinstall the latest release. And this is really good news for beta, you know, and for a release stage where players will just, like, you know, scour the place. it's kind of embarrassing. You don't feel good about it, you know.
Right.
But then again, when you fix the bug, you're like, okay, you know, that's one less crash bug. You know, crash bugs are the worst.
Right.
That's like the worst news you can get.
Well,
like,
it did crash for me twice, I'll just tell you now. It crashed for me when I tried to run the last tutorial, and it crashed for me when I tried to reload the second autosave.
Yeah, so there was a crash bug in the autosaves with ships being stuck in gates.
That was probably it, yeah.
And I fixed that, I believe, on Monday or yesterday even. Don't quite remember. The days are kind of melding in together.
I'm sure.
But the way I play is, you know, I play the game, and I test the feature, and I exit, and I change the code. I play the game, test the feature, exit, you know, and then I do playthroughs, which are like maybe hour or 2 hours, you know, start to finish. And because I'm pretty good at the game, I don't really have to load, you know, but I do intentionally load the game at certain points.
Right.
But players will do things in a much different way than a developer does. And there's no like five guys testing the game for me, unfortunately. So I have to hear about bugs from the players, which is a good thing and a bad thing. You know, it's kind of embarrassing, but at the same time, when it's fixed, it's fixed. You know, I really thought I had a really solid release. You know, because I've worked a month at polishing iteration 15 into 16.
Right.
I worked a month at it. I'm like, okay, now it's ready. You know, now it's like beautiful. Nothing's going to crash at all in this, you know. and the first day, you know, somebody finds a crash bug. So, yeah.
Well, you know, it's still relatively early, I guess, in the game's life.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, the life of the game has these stages, right? There's a stage where I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to learn programming. There's the stage where, okay, I kind of know what I'm doing. And then there's the stage where, okay, I do know what I'm doing. Whoa. Are you guys getting that?
Yeah. What? Everything okay over there?
I think that's my wife taking a shower upstairs.
Oh, no.
That might be our cue to go or something.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so basically there's all these different stages. And right now we're at the stage where players get at it. You know, so there's different moments in game design.
Right.
And this is one of the other aspects of being an indie, right? Because I'm sitting right next to the laundry room. You know, and there's the washer, there's a dryer going, there's my wife taking a shower, there's all sorts of things happening. You know,
it's kind of charming. There's a charm to it. You guys are in Chicago,
right? Right. Okay. So sometimes my cat comes by and he wants to go for a walk or he wants to play. You know, so
wait, your cat wants to go for a walk?
Yeah. I walk my cat on the leash.
Oh my God! Okay, I have a funny story I need to tell you. Then you'll appreciate this. I got my first cat 6 years ago. I'd never had a cat before; I'd only had dogs. So this cat was a stray, and she like wormed her way in, and she's still here. But she's a big sweetie, so I'm fine with that. But my best friend flies into town that night, and he knows a lot about cats. I don't know anything. I just know dogs. So we're out at like Venice Beach or something the next day, and I ask him, do we have to go home so I can walk the cat? And he laughed, I think, for about 10 minutes straight, because that was probably the dumbest thing he had ever heard. and I still feel kind of embarrassed for asking that. I didn't know any better. I only had dogs.
My cat loves walks, okay?
Really?
He loves them.
That blows my mind.
People stop, they look, they...
Did you just call it a beach?
What was that?
Did you just say beach?
No, I said leash.
Okay, I thought you said beach. I'm like, no.
I take my cat on the leash outside.
That's funny.
And you know what I do when I do this? I think about the game. It's a break, and I think about the game still, you know, while I'm watching my cat
We're all obsessed about something. So...
Hey, so I have to tell you a George Clooney story based on that.
Cause okay.
George Clooney used to live with Richard Kind, and I'd heard him tell this story where basically Richard Kind had this cat, and he just loved this cat, right? So every day this cat would poop in the cat box, and they had it in the bathroom, and Clooney would scoop the poop out of the cat box and flush it down the toilet. Well, after a while, Richard started getting kind of worried, like, hey, my cat hasn't taken a crap for days. And so Clooney kept doing this for like a week and some, right? And the guy like took the cat to the vet, and you know, it's like, the cat, you know, must be fine or whatever. So then finally at the end of it, Clooney took a dump in the litter box, right? And, yeah. But anyway, there you go.
Oh, that son of a bitch.
Yeah, well, the guy like freaked out because he thought like, wow, the cat had been holding that for that long. And so there
you go. When I first got my cat, you know, I was a proud father. The first time I saw his poop in the litter box, I'm like, okay, my little guy is fine. You know, he was a little stressed those 2 days in a new environment, but now he's going to be okay. You know,
they actually have dog treats that are shaped like cat poop.
What?
For some reason, dogs just are obsessed with the stuff. Like, I had to, we had to take our cat box because I got one of those litter maids that cleans itself out. But the dogs would be quick. Like, you know, they would know, like, hey, you know, I got to get in there because the cat was just in there. And if I wait like 5 minutes, I'm going to lose my opportunity, right?
What?
So we, yeah, the dogs are just like, I don't know, man. It's like bacon for dogs or something. So anyway, I ended up having to put the litter maid in the bathtub so that the dog can't get to it.
What?
And that like, dogs are terrible animals.
I do love them, but they are a lot more of they're a lot more to handle.
Yes.
So, Paul, tell me about the story in the game.
The story, before we get to it, maybe I should say this, that it changed 180 essentially from the original idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it changed completely. The reason was why it changed was it would be terrible that way, and I would have hated making it, which would make it even more terrible. So the story is basically, you know, the story gives the player something to strive for, right? So it's really kind of used to drive combat. You know, I'll be honest with people right now. It's not going to be Shakespeare. I didn't spend the last 4 years writing stories. I spent it writing code. So I'm going to try to be more vague. I'm going to try to let the player fill in the gaps themselves, because anything the player imagines is probably going to be better than what I can put on screen, what I can write. So there's not going to be a whole lot of story. It's going to be mostly, you know, hey, we got attacked and now we're going to fight back. You know, we're going to find out why we got attacked, and we're going to, you know, take care of our enemies here. I'm going to set them straight via a lot of missiles.
Yeah. Well, that's the only way to solve a problem sometimes.
Right. Well, if you have a lot of missiles, then, yeah, you got to use them somehow. So the story is going to essentially be a vehicle for a military campaign where you go from one area of space to another and you take over enemy bases. And you find some lost ships that might have escaped attacks during the initial attack. So you'll find some lost ships, and then you'll meet some other enemies. You know, you'll meet some pirates that you know, take advantage of the situation and try to get their piece. So you'll battle some of them. But essentially, the story is not going to be, you know, initially there's a lot of reading, a little bit. You know, when you first start the game, you might think to yourself, "Oh my God, I'm gonna have to sit through all this reading." Well, the reading is going to drop off pretty quickly. Initially, you just have to kind of explain things because it kind of goes a little bit of a tutorial initially to try to familiarize players with how the ship works, which is probably the biggest challenge of this game, is just getting past that step. I think in Space Sims in general, that's how it is. But the story is going to essentially be about a war.
Okay.
So originally, the setting was different. The setting was kind of this post-apocalyptic setting, where the player wasn't in the military, the base, the Palm 05 base that now you're part of was this relic of an ancient time sort of a thing. And then you end up controlling it. And the problem with that was the setting was just too boring and it was too much explaining. You know, you had to explain why it's in this state. You had to explain who the player is, you know, who these other guys are, that sort of a thing. Then you go to this other area of space and you have to explain that. So I'm like, this is just terrible writing. You know? Like, this is just bad. The more I'm explaining, the worse this is. Okay. And I can't keep it vague because it doesn't make any sense otherwise. So I'm like, not only is this bad, but I don't enjoy it. So I'm going to change the story. So I made the story a lot simpler. Now you're kind of part of the military. You're a retired pilot, retired admiral general. I have to get my military term straight. And then you're essentially forced back into combat. You know, and you do this, and then you take your forces, you rally your forces, you control them. You know, you're now in charge of them, and that gives you this ability to, you know, build defenses, build stations, and, you know, lead your troops to take over the enemy bases.
You know, I didn't even notice the general thing until you mentioned it.
Yeah, actually, that's another thing, right? So if you make some kind of a, you know, if there is this inaccuracy, somebody's going to let you know, just like with the bugs, you know, you're going to find out about it. And that's a good thing, you know.
That's a very good thing.
Because I don't have a team looking out for these things, you know. Right. So I have to rely on the generosity of players to tell me this in a nice way.
Well, you know? I think it's one of the beauties of Kickstarter, really, is the transparency you have with the developers that you might, that you've never really had before.
Right.
You know, I mean, you don't want, I think, Jim, you said this last time, game design by committee. But at the same time, having that openness, I think, is good for everyone.
Well, the cool thing about modding is that you can have a little bit of that, you know. So let's say you make a missile that, like one of the Kickstarter backers said, hey, I want a missile that covers the area in sand. And when sand gets into ship parts, it damages the ship.
Ooh.
And that's an interesting idea, right?
It is an interesting idea, yeah.
It's kind of like maybe I'll change it to be maybe like nanobots or radiation or something. I don't know, you know. Maybe I will tweak it a little bit. But either way, it's a good idea.
Oh.
For like an area of effect, you know, cloud of death, right? We've seen that before in a lot of games, but not space sims.
Right. Oh, I like, that's a fantastic idea.
So that's a cool idea. So maybe it doesn't fit in the storyline of the game, right? But I can make it a mod, you know, because it's not a very hard thing to do coding wise, because it's really pretty simple. Because you take, you know, you grab an area and you test for collisions in that area. And if an object goes into that area, well, then you just say, well, now you're losing health, you know, and you need a particle cloud to display the sand or whatever. So it's really easy, you know. So essentially, you know, being an indie developer lets me do that. So if somebody wants a missile that's going to shoot a crazy dust cloud of death, you know, I'm all for it, you know.
No, that's a fantastic idea. I really like it.
Yeah.
That'd be fun if you had multiple... Multiple enemies tracking you. You're trying to bomb a frigate or something in a bomber, and like you got four fighters coming on your tail. So you shoot this missile at them. Yeah, I like that.
And then you have to watch out yourself, right? Because maybe you'll run into it.
Yeah, you hit the afterburner and get the hell away from it as quickly as you can.
Right. Exactly. So yeah. So a player was playing around with the self-replicating missiles because you can mod a missile to split, right? And if you create an infinite loop, it's going to just do it forever. And then it's going to crash the game. You know, like one of the crashes was that there was too many particle effects on screen at the same time. And the reason I didn't run into this, because when I played the game, I built like 5 frigates and like 10 corvettes or 15 or whatever. But players built like 30, you know?
Jeez.
And then the game ran out of memory. That was the reason for the crash. The game ran out of memory. So it wasn't really the game's fault per se. It was, but it was more of the 32-bit nature of having like 2 gigabytes of RAM. So, you know, that taught me, hey, I need to put in unit caps, you know.
Mm.
So players can't do that, so it's reasonable. But at the same time, with modding, players will be able to change those. So your kids, you know, your kids will be able to have 1,000 versus 1,000 battles. You know, hopefully I'll yell at them some and say that's outrageous, but they'll be able to do that. You know, the game won't stop them you know, down the line. That's how long I hope the game lives.
That would be awesome. I mean, with the modability, that's the key right there, is the modability. And it sounds like I was just taking a glance at the Kickstarter page portion that talks about that. And it doesn't look like overtly complicated to mod the game at all.
So everything new tends to be, there's a spike of something complicated, right? When you first encounter it, you know, and this is basically plain text English, you know? So it says damage, right? Well, what does that do? Well, that's how much damage this bullet does. Health, right? Well, that's how much health this ship has. And there's, you know, how fast it can turn or how fast it can accelerate, right? And things get a little more complicated when you link a file to another file. Like let's say this gun is attached to this ship, and the gun has a certain type of a bullet that can split into other bullets. You know, now you're having like a matter of 4 text files. So in that sense, in the beginning, you can be confused a little bit because you don't quite know what the layout is yet. You know, but if you trace it back, then you will. You should be able to quickly understand it, but it's definitely plain text English. You just kind of have to understand some of my abbreviations maybe, or maybe the terminology like MIRV, you know. You kind of have to know that means it's going to split into multiple missiles. And then it says count, you know, how many it's going to split into. And then it's going to have the ID of the missile that's going to be the baby missile, you know. Right. So you kind of have to make those connections initially, might be a little challenging, but within a few hours of looking at it, you should be able to grasp it, unless you give up. If you give up, then then it's impossible if you give up on something. But if you're really motivated, I would say within a few hours, you should be able to go nuts with it.
Well, that's cool.
So, you know, the thing is that one person making a game is just one person. But when you have 1,000 people looking at it, trying to improve it, it's a whole other realm. So I freely admit that people will probably make a better game out of my game than I will, which is kind of a funny thought, you know. And I definitely want to give them that opportunity. I don't want to hard code things. I want them to make the best game they can. I want them to make different universes, you know, like Babylon 5. I would love to play that, you know. I can't make a game like that because it would cost me millions of dollars in licensing, right?
Right.
I can't do that. But somebody else can, hint, hint, you know. And if they need me to add a feature for that, if it's reasonable, I'll do that, you know. So I definitely want to finally solve the old Star Trek versus Star Wars in my game, right? We're going to have a battle of...
What do you think? What do you think right off the top of your head? What do you think?
I think Mr. Data will pretty much defeat anybody.
I'm also on the Star Trek side myself because... I'm always thinking of that one episode where those little ships tried to fire lasers at the Enterprise, and they were like,
"Oh, right."
They were like, "What? What is this? You know, they can't even penetrate our navigational deflector," or whatever the line was.
Right.
And that's what Star Wars is. It's all lasers. But they also have lightsabers that can cut through anything. So I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So you know, hopefully one day you'll see the Starship Enterprise versus a Star Destroyer, in Void Destroyer. Squaring off against each other, and I'm sure there'll be much debate as to the validity of the results. It's pretty funny. It's actually, if you look at some of these forums, you can spend like days reading them. The discussion of this, you know, it's pretty interesting.
Oh, that's an age old discussion, probably almost as old as I am. All right, I'm getting a little tired. I hate to do this, but we should start wrapping this up. So, Paul, I want to thank you so much.
Thank you, guys,
for joining us on our podcast. It was very enlightening because like I said, I'm already excited about the game, but I learned more about it tonight that makes me even more excited.
That's cool. That's my goal in this whole thing. I think if I can tell people about the game, I think they would. At least either love it or hate it.
Well, you know? I have to appreciate your just openness and candor about all of it. You know, I mean, that was pretty awesome.
Well, there's no other way. There's really no other way. There's the only way is forward, you know?
Right. And yeah, I'm really digging it. So yeah, Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Jim, thank you
guys
so much for, as always, being an awesome co-host, and everyone. As always, if you feel like it, subscribe to us on iTunes or on RSS. And we actually got someone liking us. Someone reviewed us on iTunes. It was the most exciting thing ever.
That's the thing, right? So you guys are also trying to create something, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So we're all trying.
It's not like me and you guys are different. You know, we're both trying to create something, you know, and that's an incredibly wonderful thing. You know, we're both catering to gamers. We are gamers.
Yeah.
Now we're saying, hey, we're going to be a little bit bigger part of the ecosystem. We're going to try at least to carve our own little piece out of it. And it's cool that we can collaborate, you know, that we can support each other, help each other out.
Well, that's what we all should be doing is just, you know, feeding each other.
Like, right. So big that the AAAs will starve. And then we'll become the AAAs, and then the new indies will kick us out.
Or at the very least, they'll start to say, hey, people like Space Sims. Why didn't we think of that?
Yeah, I think it's a battle. I think it's going to be a battle. I was kind of surprised how well Star Citizen did. I think it's a battle.
Did you see it just past 10 million?
Okay. That's the cool thing, right? So I'm not competing against Star Citizen because I already lost.
No one can. No one. That's the 800-pound gorilla, which is great.
You know, there's probably more people going to hate Star Citizen than they're going to play my game ever. More people are going to complain about it, you know, once it's finally released. So that's why I have to make something unique, you know. I can't compete with them head to head. I have to make something unique that they can't do, essentially. You know, they can't do these certain crazy things like combining genres and having the player die 10 times in a row in a small fighter, you know.
Right.
They can't do that. So I claim victory in that realm. 100%.
Well, excuse me, that's the beauty of all these space games. You know, is that, you know, we're getting all this variety now, whereas for a while we had barely anything. And now, you know, we're getting all this variety, which is great. Like your game, like games like, you know, Star Citizen, you have Limit Theory, and you have Star Skyjacker, and you have all this, you know, variety, which is great. You know, everyone wins. Everyone wins, you know.
Definitely great, yeah. Definitely, the more players play a space, and the more we'll be able to play them, you know, because it's a little bit of a challenge. Initially, depending on the sim, you know, some are more casual than others. But, you know, first-person shooter games had this chance to evolve for 20 years, you know, and they're at this level where they're really good, and they're really good at what they do, and they have different elements to them. And space sims are kind of like sitting there, except for now. Now is like a really nice time.
That's fantastic. Well, again, Paul, thank you for joining us. It has been great. Jim, thank you as always. This has been an awesome podcast. And everyone, thank you so much for listening. Have a great day or night wherever you are.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler. Sure thing. Guys, you're